Please join hands. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. So now this time I have been in this country for almost 3 months. Now I will be leaving soon. And this is the first time I am speaking to purely European-American audience. So it is a very good experience for me, myself being a European. I came to Colorado. Actually, my intention was not to speak, but to rest, and because I have had quite a lot of teaching recently. But I am very glad to be a Buddhist. Being a Buddhist, I meet very inspiring people, and among others, Dr. Chernikov. I am very grateful to meet so wise and well-trained people. And I'm also very glad to meet you. Now, I am a speaker, but I'm a speaker because you are an audience. If you were not an audience, I would not be a speaker. And I am to speak about I was asked to choose a topic to speak about, and so the only topic I thought would be really quite basic and interesting for you in daily life is the topic of mindfulness. Now, as we know or should know, the Buddha's teachings is not based on any dogma. It is based, we are reciting always, the Buddha Dharma is ehipasiko. You should come and test it by yourself. Do not accept blindly. Test it by yourself. It is, in a way, in this sense, more what we call philosophy than philosophy means love of wisdom rather than a religious dogma. Now, we should know that this Buddhist philosophy, no matter what tradition, is all based on the middle path. We are practicing Buddhists, we are practicing the middle path. Very important to understand. The middle path is the cream of wisdom. So when we study Buddhism, the Buddha explained the path. First we have the milk, then we have the curds, then we have the butter, finally we have the ghee. And the ghee of the Buddhist path is the middle path. In order to understand the middle path, we have to have training. And the Buddhist training is in ethics, in concentration and in wisdom. These are the three trainings. And these three trainings are based in mindfulness. That's why today I'm going to talk to you about mindfulness. The mindfulness being the base for all these three trainings. And these three trainings, when we have them, they will crystallize into the middle path. And when we have the middle path, we start to understand the real nature of our experience. This is what is Buddhism about. Now, according to Buddha's teachings, we are deluded and we are suffering because we don't understand the real nature of our experience. And according to the Buddha's teachings, the real nature of our experience is selflessness. But we all have the self. Because we have the self, we are attached. We are subjected to defilements. Because Buddha explains all defilements based on attachment. And attachment is to what? Attachment is to the self. Very important to understand. When we start to see it, we get insight into the middle path. The middle path is based on the dependent origination. All in our experience, according to Buddhism, is dependent origination. So that's why I started by explaining I'm a speaker today, because speaker is dependent on the audience. Now I am a Buddhist monk, and I am a Buddhist monk because I'm dependent on the Buddha, on the Dharma, his teachings, and on the Sangha, on the society practicing these teachings. So I am also dependent on you. Everything we experience actually is a mutual dependence, very important to see. So we learn Buddhism actually to see this, not just to read about it, not just to know different theories, all so many different theories, because in Buddhism, Buddhism is basically the wisdom. And wisdom has many, many different perspectives. So that is wisdom, the ability to see things from different perspectives. When we see different perspectives, we see the illusionary nature of the self. But because we rely on this one perspective, the self perspective, therefore we never satisfied. We never satisfied because the self is never satisfied. The self can never be satisfied. Very important to understand. The self, impossible to satisfy. It always wants something. The self is never, never self-sufficient. But the dependent origination is self-sufficient. Whether we know it or not know it, whether there is an enlightened person to teach it or there is no enlightened person to teach it, according to Buddhism, this fact of dependent origination exists completely, independent of our judgments. It is just there. And the Buddha, all that he did is he just pointed to that fact. And in order to understand this fact, the Buddha has explained, we have to practice mindfulness. And the essence of mindfulness is the practice of the four foundations of mindfulness. In all Buddhist traditions, same explanation. When we practice mindfulness, the essence of this practice is the four foundations of mindfulness. When we are based in the four foundations of mindfulness, we eventually can be based in dependent origination. And to be based in dependent origination, finally, is not to be based anywhere. So the Buddha, according to all Buddhist traditions, is the one who does not dwell. In Pali, it's called Anoka. Oka is house. Anoka is no house. When we become enlightened, we have no house. The Buddha has no house. Because he has no house, he belongs to the beings. Because we have the house, we belong to ourselves. Because we belong to ourselves, we are in trouble. And because we are in trouble, we need the Dharma. And this Dharma precisely is the dependent origination. And to understand the dependent origination, we have to practice mindfulness. So, because of the time limitations, I will just say a few words what mindfulness is and how the same mindfulness can be explained in very different ways. Depends on the tradition. But finally, mindfulness is only one. There are not two mindfulnesses. And also, ultimately, the Dharma is only one. The Buddha has taught the truth is only one. There is not a second truth. And we are practicing the meditation, we are practicing the study of Buddhism to realize this one truth. When we have realized this one truth, then we will see, aha, this tradition explained this one truth in this way, that tradition in another way, that tradition in another way, and the study becomes really interesting. But finally, by learning Buddhism, by practicing Buddhism, we want to realize the one truth, and this truth is called the middle way. And the middle way we can only realize when we practice mindfulness. And we can explain mindfulness in many different ways, but it boils down always to the four foundations of mindfulness. All different teachings actually are skillful means to lead us to these four foundations of mindfulness. So, these four foundations of mindfulness, they are the base for so-called factors of enlightenment. And when we have these factors of enlightenment, the enlightenment comes. When we don't have these factors of enlightenment, the enlightenment cannot come. Because enlightenment is based on causes and conditions. But being based on causes and conditions, we can go to the realization which transcends the causes and conditions. So being based on causes and conditions, we can attain the realization which transcends the causes and conditions. This is same in all Buddhist traditions. If we don't have the causes and conditions, if we don't have the path which is compounded, we cannot attain that which is beyond the path and which is uncompounded. Very important to understand. So now the time is running, so four foundations of mindfulness. The commentary to the Satipatthana Sutta, which is the base for our understanding of the practice of mindfulness, says that actually the Buddha has only found the old way hidden in the deep forest, the old way to the old city of Nirvana, to the old city of liberation, to which there are only four entrances. And these four entrances, they summarize the whole of our experience. And which are the four entrances? The entrance of mindfulness, literally gone into the body, kaya, gata, sati, the mindfulness gone into the sensations, mindfulness gone into the minds, and mindfulness gone into the objects of mind connected with the process of liberating. So these four objects actually summarize the whole of our experience. Now, when we practice mindfulness, what is mindfulness? In the Pali language, the mindfulness is called sati, and the sati literally means memory. Now, in our language, when we say memory, it means remembering something in the past. But it is very significant, this word memory. We remember something in the past because we have lived it very intensively. Right? Am I right to say so? What we remember from the past is what we have lived very intensively. Now, when I ask you, what did you have for breakfast 2 weeks ago, you will have a difficult time to remember. Right? But what you have experienced in your life intensively, you will remember. Now, in order to practice, we have to be awake. To practice means to be awake. Actually, the enlightenment means the state of awakening, bodhi, from the Sanskrit root, bodh. So when we are awake, we are practicing. And when we are not awake, we are actually not practicing. And we are awake, what is happening? We are perfectly aware of the object of our attention. This is the first aspect of mindfulness. When we practice mindfulness, we are fully aware of the object of our attention and we experience it intensively. That's why we cannot forget it. If we don't experience it intensively, then while paying attention to one thing, we think about other things. So the Pali tradition defines the mindfulness as apilapana. Apilapana means a mind which does not wobble, which is stable. So how do we know we are practicing mindfulness? Our mind is stable and awake. Very important to understand. So according to Abhidharma Kosha, which is like the base for studying the northern tradition, the mindfulness, first aspect of mindfulness is the object. We are experiencing the object of our attention with utmost clarity. Then we know we are mindful. When we experience the object of our attention not clearly, then the mind is likely to run to other objects. And that is called monkey mind. Now when we subject it to monkey mind, we know we are not mindful. According to Buddhist philosophy, all unwholesome states of mind are based on agitated mind, monkey mind. Very important. So first the mind has to settle. And it can settle only when it experiences the object of attention very intensively. Then another aspect of mindfulness is wisdom. And the wisdom means penetration of the object of our attention. Penetration of the object of our attention means penetrating the real characteristics of this object. The own characteristics, and the common characteristics. So this brings us to vipassana. And finally, the mindfulness means the putting things together with wisdom. Understanding that our content of our experience is all interrelated. There is no body without the feeling. There is no feeling without the body. There has to be body and mind together that the feeling can arise. When the feeling arises, the attachment will arise, or non-attachment will arise. When there is feeling, there is a sign of the object which we grasp. That's why we feel, because we grasp the sign of the object. Then the mind will go to the object. If there is no sign of the object to grasp, the mind will not go to the object. Then there will not be attention. All in our experience is interrelated. When we see this interrelation, it is also the subject matter of mindfulness. So, when we are mindful, the mind becomes stable and wise. So, it is mindfulness is a base for both, for concentration and for wisdom. The sutras of transcendental wisdom call concentration and moon, and the wisdom sun. In order to experience intensively what is happening, we need the moon and the sun. When the moon and the sun is in our heart, all that we experience will have the nature of intensity. When the moon and the sun are not in the heart, all we experience will be not clear. Now, according to Buddhism, and not only Buddhism, according to the teachings of the wise, the nature of our mind is not limitation. The nature of our mind is non-limitation. Now we are limited because we don't experience the object of our experience clearly, and because we have defilements. When we are mindful, we can become aware of it. When we are not mindful, we cannot be aware of it. Why? Because when we are mindful, we concentrate on the object of our attention, but our concentration is accompanied by relaxation and clarity. Normally, if we have no training in meditation, when we become concentrated, we become tight. So you can, according to Buddhism, we distinguish the right mindfulness and wrong mindfulness. The right mindfulness is the base for right samadhi. The wrong mindfulness is a base for wrong samadhi. The right samadhi leads to vipassana, to insight. The wrong samadhi cannot lead to insight. It is bound to ignorance. And ignorance, according to Buddhism, the nature of ignorance is not understanding the impermanent nature of all the content of our experience. That means impermanent nature of the mind, impermanent nature of the feelings and in the permanent nature of the body. And when we practice mindfulness, we first are to realize the impermanent nature of the body. When we see impermanent nature of the body, we see the impermanent nature of sensations. And because these sensations, they control our worldly mind, we are accumulating karma because of sensations. Very important to understand. Because of sensations, we do worldly deeds, good deeds or bad deeds. So sensation plays the central role in the process of liberating the mind. And sensation has to be very clear. And sensation can only be clear when the body is clear. Very important to understand. That's why the four foundations of mindfulness start with the clear understanding of the body, of the experience of the body. When we have clarity about the selfless nature of the body, we are, so to say, established on the path. So the Buddha says, yesam kaya gati, you have not learned Pali, but never mind. I'm used in reciting Pali. Yesam kaya gata sati virudham, tesam amatam virudham. The one who neglects the mindfulness gone into the body neglects the nectar of immortality. The nectar of immortality is the liberation, however you call it. So first, our concentration and wisdom has to go inside the body. When our concentration and wisdom goes inside the body, we can penetrate the sensation. When we penetrate the sensation, we can penetrate the worldly mind. Because the worldly mind is based on running after sensations. And according to the Buddha's teachings, we can only not be deluded about the ultimate reality when we are not deluded about the worldly reality. This is a peculiarity of Buddhism. When we practice Buddhism, we should be very clear about it. What is the difference between Buddhism and the other religions? According to Buddhism, we should not start with the ultimate reality, because the ultimate reality is something we cannot attach to. This philosophy is the most important, especially in our days. Ultimate reality is ultimate reality because we cannot grasp it. If you grasp it, it is not ultimate reality. So, in order to not to be mistaken about ultimate reality, which can only be realized according to Buddhism through the Eightfold Path, through the Middle Path, we should penetrate the nature of our worldly experience. This is Buddhism. When you're not mistaken about the nature of the worldly experience, you cannot be mistaken about the ultimate reality. If you hold the ultimate reality, it is your concept of ultimate reality. It is not ultimate reality. It is a name you give to ultimate reality, but it is not ultimate reality. And according to Buddhism, we hold to ourselves because we hold to the concepts and the names. And we do not penetrate the real nature of our experience, which is selfless. So what we hold to, it is same in all Buddhist tradition. What we actually hold to, what we grasp, is our concepts, our names, our communication, but we do not grasp the reality. So, in some Buddhist traditions, you start learning mindfulness by understanding the empty nature of the body. Understanding the empty nature of materiality, you understand the empty nature of sensations. When you understand the empty nature of sensations, you understand the empty nature of the mind. When you understand the empty nature of the mind, you understand the empty nature of all the objects that appear in the mind. This is the non-dualistic approach to mindfulness. So you can practice mindfulness with the basic approach of understanding reality as interdependence, and you can understand the practice of mindfulness as, in non-dual way, as understanding the emptiness of all the content of our experience. But it is to be understood that emptiness is only the means. Emptiness is not the end. If one sees emptiness as the end, then one does not understand emptiness. We empty the content of our experience just in order not to hold to it. But if we understand the emptiness as something really existing, we do not understand the teachings of the Buddha at all. That's why it is very important, before understanding the non-dual approach to understanding our experience, to understand the basic Buddhism, which teaches us to understand all the contents of our experience as a process. And in the process, everything depends on the other. Nothing exists by itself. This everything depending on the other is a miracle. And it is a miracle of being awake. Very important to understand. So the non-dualistic approach to the Buddha's teachings is that this miracle is that in the mind nothing can be really established. What we establish in the mind is only, is not really established, it is like falsely established. And we need to establish something in the mind to make it work. If we don't establish anything in the mind, it will not have clarity. So first we have to establish something in the mind in accordance with the true nature of our experience in order to let go. When we let go, we can understand the body as emptiness, the feelings as emptiness, the mind as emptiness, and the objects of mind as emptiness. So this is a different perspective to this basic approach to the four foundations of mindfulness. And they are complementary. And the learning of Buddhism, Buddha explains himself, is like removing the gross wedge by a more subtle wedge, until we do not need any more wedges. When we don't need any more wedges, we are always mindful. And this is a state of enlightened person. Always mindful. Always mindful of the object of his attention. So this kind of attention is not really attention. It is just reflecting object. And the object, according to Buddhism, is a body. If there is no body, there is no object. Now that which receives the object, that is a sensation. So the sensation is the reception of the object. So when we understand the object, we understand that the sensation is something we should not hold to. But sensation is still the best part of our lives. When we don't have sensation, we are like zombies. But when we have attention without clinging to it, we become wise. And when we become wise, we can control our mind. Until we find that there is no one really to control. And that, when we find, we can go beyond sensation. The Buddha explained the state of realization is going beyond sensation. Sensation as non-sensation. The mind as no mind. The objects of mind as no objects of mind. So the Buddhism is really the teaching of wisdom of going beyond the all controversies, going beyond all conflicts. Being in the conflicts, being in the controversies, but understanding something which is beyond that. This is the essence of mindfulness. So you start by being concentrated on the object of your attention, yet being receptive to everything that is happening at the same time. That is mindfulness. So you have concentration in it and you have wisdom in it also. Concentration means your mind does not wobble. And wisdom means, Buddha summarizes in one sentence, Sabbe dhamma na alam abhinivesaya. There is nothing in our experience worth of clinging to. It is easy to speak, but very difficult to practice. But when we contemplate these things, they will bring a lot of benefit to us. Why? Because even if we practice little and we understand the practice, it will transform our personality. And the Buddhism is the practice of transformation, our personality. From holding to the self, to wisdom. And we are all holding to the self, that's why we are suffering. When we become wise, we hold less to the self. When we hold less to the self, the practice of mindfulness becomes natural. So, that much for today. Now, thank you for your attention. I hope I have my little talk is of some use to you. And we should encourage each other to practice this path of transformation to become less selfish and more open to others. And when we open to others, we open to ourselves. Thank you very much. So let's give a chance for questions. Any questions there? No question? Yes, please.
Is it possible to be mindful of monkey mind?
Yes. Otherwise, what are you mindful of?
I mean, but as somebody whose mind...
Actually, there is nowadays in America, and it has come to Europe also, there is some kind of... scientific mindfulness. It has become very trendy now. I am also sometimes in Europe speaking to these groups of scientific mindfulness. It has become very popular, but this scientific mindfulness is very good, no doubt. But actually it is not based so much on Buddha's teachings. According to Buddha's teachings, the practice of mindfulness is based in faith. And the faith in Buddhism is not a blind faith. In Buddhism, the faith is called okapana, which means, o means down, ava, kapana means arrange. And you arrange yourself down with your experience. That is the true meaning of the faith. So there has to be wisdom for the faith. Buddhism does not accept blind faith. It does not mean that Buddhists don't have the blind faith. I have myself lived many, many years in the traditional Buddhist countries. So many, many Buddhists, they are also can become extremists, even the monks, extreme nationalists, even violent. But it doesn't mean anything. Like the Christian philosophy is also the philosophy of non-violence, and we all know the history of Christianity. Especially in my country, some of the most outstanding thinkers have been burned alive by the church. So it doesn't mean when we have philosophy of mindfulness and non-violence that we become immediately mindful and non-violent. But we have to practice. And the beginning of the practice is to find out the sorrowful nature of the monkey mind, troublesome nature of the monkey mind. So this is beginning. And because we have faith, then, according to Buddhist doctrine, the result of mindfulness is what? Is a shame of doing evil and fear of doing evil. So actually it is similar to Christianity, not different. Similar to any great religion, even Judaism. So when we have shame of doing evil and fear of doing evil, then we can go into the deep practice. And the deep practice is based on being concentrated and letting go. This is a Buddhist practice. So this is what we have been doing before my speech, and I hope you continue doing it under the guidance of a very qualified teacher in the future. So being aware of the monkey mind is the essence of mindfulness. And that's why the sutra explaining the practice of mindfulness starts with the mindfulness of the breath. When we aware of the breath, we aware of the inconvenience of the monkey mind. The meditation on breath is to reduce and finally to destroy the monkey mind.
Could you share a little bit about how you got involved with Buddhism?
Actually, all is conditioning. I was not particularly interested in Buddhism, even though I studied Chinese in my young days. I was trained as a sinologist, but I was not particularly interested in Buddhism. I was not interested in spirituality at all, and my parents were communists, and I was not brought in any religion whatsoever. I was brought up in a communist country, but when the Soviet army invaded us in 68, I became a refugee. Then I studied in France and I had no papers. Finally, I wanted to renew my passport, but they recruited me to the army in Czech, so I decided to stay away. So they condemned me as a deserter in my country, so I could not go back anyway. And so I went to, because in France, if I apply for the naturalization, it will take 10 years. So I went to Germany because I have a German name and my father has had German schools, so he was German speaking. And according to German law, if your father is recognized as a German, you can claim a passport. So I went to Germany, I did not know anyone. And I don't want to stay in the refugee camp. So I looked in the telephone book and there I found the Buddhistisches Haus, the Buddhist house. So I thought it's better to stay in the Buddhist house than in a refugee camp. So I telephoned there and it was a Sri Lankan Buddhist mission. So I became a kapiya. Kapiya is like a servant of the monks, because of Buddhist monks in the Theravada tradition can't use money and they can't do practically anything. So I was working a little bit in the garden, taking care of the monks, waiting to get my papers, and started to learn the Pali and some Buddhism and became interested. So I went to India, Sri Lanka, and so on, and became more interested. And this is how I got to Buddhism. So everything in our life is conditioning, but this conditioning, if we believe in Buddhism, is based on our karma. What is karma? Karma is our interest, our desire, our will to do something. So when the conditioning ripen, then we are programmed in this or that way. So we are all interested in different things because we all have different karma. And according to our interest, according to our, say, tendencies, then we experience what we experience. This is, so we are, whether we are aware of it or not, in some way we are programmed. And the only way to get a deep insight is to understand this programming. So Buddhism is basically the wisdom in regard to dependent origination. Dependent origination is our programming.
Could you please describe the beads you have?
The beads is a skillful means for not letting the mind run outside. So I don't, not necessarily, I have learned all kinds of mantras, but I don't recite necessarily mantras. When I feel the beads, my mind stays inside, not outside. So it's kind of a skillful means. Any other questions? Yes, please. Actually, according to Buddha's teachings, at least in some sutras, like the Sandhi Nirmochana Sutra, in our mind, nothing is established. This is a mystery. What is established, we have established in a way ourselves. But in the mind, nothing is established. What we establish in the mind, according to that we are programmed, either in a good way or in the bad way. But the mind by itself, nothing is established there. This is a mystery. And by studying the dependent origination, we start to discover this mystery. When we can actually see it, we understand the middle path. The middle path is actually, middle path ripened then when you penetrate the object which you cannot grasp. And what is the object you cannot grasp? Emptiness, signlessness and desirelessness. This is the object you cannot grasp. When that object appears in the mind, not as a concept, but as an experience, then you reach the middle way. It is same in all Buddhist traditions. And when you start studying Buddhism, then you get some, at least, intellectual insight into that. With that intellectual insight, you work until you actually can experience it in concentration, in samadhi. So the samadhi means application of the mind to the object equally. And we cannot apply the mind to the object equally because we of our attachments, of our aversions. So we are not, so to say, experiencing the middle path. Because we have attachments, we have aversions, so we cannot see things as they really are. So all Buddhist practices are to guide us to see things as they really are. And the condition for that is a pure mind. When the mind is pure, it can see things as they really are. And to see things as they really are is nothing is worthy of grasping. And that is mystery. This mystery is a wonderful thing. And it transforms our grasping mind to wisdom. Is it convincing?
So that in Pali, Vedana simply means, translated usually as feeling tone, it's pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, that's it. But in, once I get to Mahayana texts and the Sanskrit versions of things, Vedana in Sanskrit is translated as sensation, which is what you were translating.
Yes.
And these seem contradictory to me.
Actually not. Actually not so much. It's very useful. I am myself a student of languages, especially Indian languages. I have been teaching that for, that is my job. Myself, I don't dare to describe myself as a scholar, but I am, say, a student of Sanskrit. And teach, even so student, I still dare to teach it. That it's from the root vit, which means to know. Actually, we know through sensation. And who knows? The mind knows. And what kind of mind? The worldly mind. The worldly mind is completely, so to say, in the grasp of sensations. It likes or dislikes. And it judges, this should be like this, this must be like that, this is right, everything else is wrong. And this is what kind of makes us aloof from the our real experience. And the real experience is based on the pure mind. When the mind is pure, it can check this tendency which is so deep. The more we meditate, the more we will see how deep in us is this tendency to grasp the pleasant and to resist the unpleasant. But we think that it is natural, because we don't know, at least in the Mahayana teachings, it's most important. I have been trained in the Zen tradition. It is a base. This is the center of our delusion. When we see this, so we tend to let go. And this letting go is actually the practice of tolerance or endurance. And the realization is the endurance of the Dharma. And the Dharma is perfectly selfless. We have the self, but the Dharma is perfectly selfless. And because it is selfless, it is real. But we don't see it like that. Because of our deep anusaya, which means tendencies, say, the latent tendencies for grasping and for resistance. And when there is no grasping and resistance, then we either search for excitement or are excited or become dull or become bored. And now this is how we are educated. We always have to grasp something in order to get satisfaction. But actually, from the Buddhist point of view, it prevents us from seeing reality as it really is. And seeing reality as it really is the real happiness. But we usually do not see it like that. And this happiness is based on transcending this dichotomy between the pleasant sensation and unpleasant sensation, which control our worldly mind. Our worldly mind is completely controlled by that. When we don't meditate, we don't see it. But when we meditate, we start to see it. And that is because of mindfulness. So the sensation has a central role in the Buddhist model of liberation. That's why the 12 links of dependent origination due to sensation, there is the thirst due to thirst, there is clinging due to clinging, there is karma, and due to karma there is this rebirthing, which is samsara. Okay, so in what language should I do? I will do in Chinese for a change, and it is very brief and very deep. Yuan zi kong de pu ji yu qie, wo deng yi zhong sheng, jie kong cheng fo dao, which means yuan zi kong de, I wish these merits we have gained tonight by listening and practicing Dharma, puji spread to all beings, so that I myself and them together attain the supreme enlightenment. That is the dedication of merit in Chinese. Thank you.